This is an Iowa Archives special. I'm Rick Fredrickson, and for the coming hour, music from 100 years of old recordings. It's all about Iowa, our famous composers, musicians, and vocalists, as well as major events and places where music is part of our history. Perhaps you were there when some of these recordings were made. Much of today's program will strike a familiar ring, representing a dazzling medley of homegrown musical talent, all packed into 1 hour. Iowa Archives premiered in 2007, and this was the first clip in our historic sound project, the miniature steam engine train ride at Riverview Park in Des Moines. The classic amusement park also featured a ballroom, the Riviera, where 1,000 people would crowd onto the dance floor. This old recording is from a live radio broadcast from the 1950s.
And now back to music here from the Riviera, the much-requested St. Paul Waltz.
Riverview closed in 1978. The ballroom burned down 3 years later. One of the country's most talented band leaders used to perform there, Iowa native Glenn Miller.
Mid spotlights and celebrities, the Glen Island Casino opens its 1939 season. Let's listen to Glenn Miller's music.
With 1940 approaching, the Glenn Miller Orchestra was surging in popularity and had its own radio program 3 nights a week, Moonlight Serenade, the theme song that Miller wrote while studying music.
Tonight, our campus spotlight shines on Loras College in Iowa and Davidson College down in North Carolina.
Glenn Miller was born in 1904. This is his personal piano on display at his birthplace home in Clarinda. He also played trombone, but worked at this mahogany Baldwin to compose and arrange some of his biggest hits in the big band era.
A big band typically was about 17 members. There were five saxes, four trombones, four trumpets, guitar, bass, and drums.
Marvin Negley is president of the Glenn Miller Birthplace Society.
There were, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of big bands around the country. And these bands were traveling bands, so they performed in Iowa and Missouri and all the Midwest states as well.
This excerpt is from a 4th of July program at Des Moines' old Shrine Auditorium in 1940.
Now, Glenn, what have you in the way of a little fireworks?
Everybody loves my baby.
As World War II raged on, Miller enlisted and said farewell over the radio.
There's a lot of swell guys in the outfit I'm going in, and maybe all of us can get together again after this thing is over. In the meantime, I'll see you all in the Army, and we'll say goodbye in the best way we know how.
Miller ended up directing the Army Air Force Band and performed hundreds of concerts for GIs in Europe. In this classic recording, Miller talks to German soldiers in German.
Glenn Miller persönlich.
Good evening.
At the age of 40, flying to a performance in France, Miller's plane vanished over the English Channel.
Major Glenn Miller, the well-known American band leader, is reported missing.
One of his biggest lifetime achievements was winning the music industry's first ever gold record in 1942.
And it actually is a recording of Chattanooga Choo Choo, but it's in gold, solid gold, and it's really fine.
Won't you choo choo me home?
Chattanooga, Chattanooga.
Get aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga.
All aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga. Chattanooga
Choo Choo. Won't you choo choo me home?
Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Southwest Iowa also helped propel the careers of two young boys. Early radio gave them their first big audience.
You hear this young man on the air quite a bit. Good morning, Donnie.
Well, good morning.
Can you say Merry Christmas to all the folks out there?
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Oh, say it again real loud.
Merry Christmas.
On Christmas morning in 1946, Warren Nielsen invited two young brothers to sing on his KMA radio program in Shenandoah.
Donnie, what'd you get for Christmas? What'd Santa Claus bring you?
Well, a pocket knife, a football.
Donnie was 9 years old, and it would be another decade before he and his brother Phil would become the famous Everly Brothers.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list.
The talented Everly family was well known around Shenandoah. Parents Ike and Margaret were studio musicians and later had their own radio program. For their two young sons growing up in southwest Iowa, entertaining was in the family's DNA.
Oh, that was really swell, Donnie Everly. Thanks a whole lot. Here's a fella next. He didn't sleep all night. He was rehearsing his song, I hear. I hear you were singing your song in your sleep, Philip. Is that right?
That's what Mother said, but I don't know.
Philip, how old are you?
7 years old.
You're 7 years old, uh-huh. Well, folks, here is Philip Everly now, and he's got a very fine song for you. It's Silent Night.
At the time of this local radio show, no one could imagine how popular the Everly Brothers would become later when they harmonized together. In 1957, they sang their first big hit in this vintage performance posted on YouTube.
18, 20. I think Pat Boone is old enough to be their grandfather. They have a wonderful record, Bye Bye Love. Sing.
Within a year, they had two number one singles on Billboard, including this one.
Dream, 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 dream. Dream, dream, dream when I want you. In my arms when I...
40 years after singing Christmas carols in Iowa, the Everly Brothers were among the first superstars inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Dream, dream, dream.
Many of our sound recordings are just ordinary Iowans. This rare recording is from a 1962 church service in Amana. Descendants from the Lutheran church in Germany sing a cappella. There is no organ, no stained glass windows, no icons of any kind, just plain wooden benches. The Amana Church Society looks inward. No distractions, it's a personal relationship with God. The Amana colonies are now one of Iowa's most popular tourist destinations, but the community's rich culture is still visible and still audible in this recording from 1959, when Henry Dietrich played the old German zither for guests at the Oxyokian. In 2009, Iowa Archives went to Woolstock to visit the birthplace of George Reeves, better known as Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
It was in the 1950s when Reeves portrayed the Man of Steel on a popular TV action show. but Reeves' filmography covers more than 40 movies, including a small part in Gone with the Wind. The Iowan also sang. This is George Reeves in the 1940 movie Argentine Nights.
To a distant town where the moon looks down from a purple sky. We may run into senoritas who greet you with the sigh.
In a sad footnote, the dilapidated house in Woolstock where Reeves was born was torn down in 2011. Perhaps the most unusual choir we've run across is a recent recording, a group of medical students at Des Moines University. Standing in their clinical white coats, they sang to one of the most critical audiences imaginable.
My name is Marilyn Harder, and I'm from Fort Dodge, and my husband donated his body. He was in education all of his life as a career and thought that this was a perfect way to continue educating people.
In a ceremony to honor Iowans who donated their bodies for medical study, a dozen students, having completed anatomy classes, soothed the audience through the holistic power of music.
I sing because I'm happy.
This is an Iowa Archives special. We're listening to 100 years of music from our historic sound project. After this break, the oldest recording in our collection, and sounds from the weekend that rock and roll history was made at Wadena. Welcome back to this sampling of Iowa's history through music. I'm Rick Fredrickson. Our Iowa Archives project has collected hundreds of old sound and voice recordings in recent years. Many of them relate to Iowa's prolific contributions to music, from composers and performers to events and places that are associated with music. We've already reviewed some sound clips from the 20th and 21st centuries. Now we roll back the years to the 19th century and the oldest recordings in the Iowa Archives Anthology. This sound clip is from the 1890s. A wax cylinder was used to record Omaha Indians performing a Hethushka grass dance. At one time, living and hunting in western Iowa, the Omaha Nation today is a 14-square-mile reservation bordering the Missouri River, including the Blackbird Bend area on the Iowa side.
I think it's very, very important because I see it as a part of our identity.
Wynema Morris is a teacher and a member of the Omaha tribe.
And I think it's just makes up another aspect of who we are as who we are as Omaha people. It's as important as the language.
These recordings were remastered by the Library of Congress. Women sang this 1895 rally song when warriors went out on patrol.
Those would be like cheerleaders. It'd be to sing songs of you know, get out there, do your best, and of course come back, but be your bravest. Don't be afraid of the enemy.
War songs featured high pulsating drums and dramatic action with warriors acting out combat.
Very stylized, very to convey emotion, and that's what ballet does. Basically, that would be the Indian ballet of bravery, courage, fear. And the war whoop at the end, it's just pure joy, pure happiness.
The Omaha Nation still holds its annual powwow like it has for over 200 years. A northeast Iowa farm made rock and roll history one summer. A tiny town hosted the Wadena Rock Festival.
What do you want?
It was the summer of 1970, a year after the Woodstock Rock Festival, and the country was in turmoil.
When the horrors of the Kent State shooting...
Anti-war demonstrators protest U.S.
randomly shot at civilians.
We bombed enemy-occupied territories in Cambodia.
Well, I would consider myself at that point an Iowa hippie.
When baby boomers were still young, Pat Wilson from Mason City was a budding peace activist.
We were pretty rebellious and were starting to really stand up for things and be pretty vocal about stuff that we didn't agree with.
We'd like to dedicate this next number to everybody here.
Pat and her future husband ended up at a three-day rock festival outside the little town of Wadena. The Chambers Brothers were among some 30 bands in the lineup.
People get ready, there's a train coming.
Officials were against the concert from the beginning. Drugs, violence, and overcrowding had marred other events, and promoters shifted the festival to Wadena after it was banned from Galena, Illinois. Gary Bond was born in Wadena and remembers the fear of motorcycle gangs and hippie phobia that overwhelmed townspeople.
Well, some of them, they were carrying guns. People were carrying firearms and locking their doors. They were transporting their families out of town for safety. Wadena was kind of a redneck little town.
Right up until the opening act on July 31st, the state attorney general was trying to make it impossible for the show to go on. But in the end, fearing riots if the plug was pulled, authorities backed down. Gerald Blue is editor of the Fayette County Union.
Governor Robert Ray, in fact, he was highly criticized for it at the time. He actually did take the stage at the Wadena Rock Festival, and he told the young kids to enjoy themselves and to conduct themselves in a positive manner, which they did.
Blue was at the farm every day taking pictures for his paper. He estimates more than 40,000 people came.
As I rode in the tombstone on my horse's back, I saw what I relate to you going on behind my back.
They had some of the top entertainers at that time. They were flying them into Waterloo, Iowa, and then driving them up. But the stage was massive.
Mason Prophet sang his anti-war song, Hangman. The performance schedule included Leon Russell, the Everly Brothers, Little Richard, Johnny Winter, the Guess Who, REO Speedwagon, and Poco. No actual recordings from Wadena are believed to have survived, but many of the bands and the songs they played are posted on YouTube. Illegal drugs were part of the scene and were sold openly. LSD, pills, and marijuana. Dennis Naughton, a lawyer in Marion, is writing a book on the Wadena Rock Festival.
The people who attended said there was actually a U-Haul truck where you could get in line and buy whatever you wanted, and if you didn't like the effect of that drug, you could go back and complain, and they would give you something else.
This is where the counterculture came to celebrate, just outside Wadena. The old farmhouse is gone now, but it's still very much farmland, mostly corn. Just down the hill is Famous. That's where the hippies came, disrobed, and bathed in the Volga River.
And all of a sudden, there were 2,000 naked people in the river, skinny dipping. And we were having a great time. And I think at that point, perhaps through the use of some substances that we were using at the time, that may have really reduced our inhibitions, but a good time was had by all.
Airplanes flew low over the frolicking river scene, and some locals started to change their mind about the summer of love.
Oh, yes, by all means, 21 years of age, that was quite an exciting event to see. And even some of the elderly men in town thought it was all right. Some of the elderly women in town locked their husbands up so they couldn't be exposed to it. But.
And if you don't know what I'm feeling, take a look, because I'm revealing.
Buffy St. Marie was there, Joan Baez, and the Chambers Brothers. Those were the three that I remember specifically.
When the Rock Fest ended, authorities moved in and made some arrests on drug charges, but there was no serious crime. When Jerry Blue lost his wallet taking pictures, somebody returned it to the post office, and business was brisk for local merchants. The town grocery store where Gary Bond worked sold three semis of Budweiser in one day. Today, he runs Barney's Tavern, where photos and memorabilia enshrine the biggest days of Wadena's history.
They gave me a different way to view the hippies, where I was a redneck, you know. It changed my life to the aspect that I was glad to be from Wadena. It gave the town a name. I guess that's what it took to put the little town on the map.
The Chambers Brothers closed out Saturday night's performance with their energetic song Time, which echoed across the valley that encircles Wadena. We commemorated the rock and roll anniversary in 2010.
I think Wadena sort of started my being aware of the political movements, the human rights movements in various forms that were going on in the country. I think it changed my life for the better.
Pat Wilson went into social work and has just retired. Photographer Jerry Blue now owns the newspaper and talks to grade school kids about the day Wadena rocked. Bar owner Gary Bond welcomes back former hippies to reminisce, and author Dennis Naughton says Wadena is an important part of Iowa history.
This rock festival was noted for being peaceful. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got killed. And also for the sensible way that the officials and state leaders handled the situation.
Perhaps nothing has changed more over time than the state of Iowa. After trying to shut down the extravaganza in 1970, the State Historical Museum celebrated the festival for its 40th anniversary. Most of us listen to music on radio, CDs, or iPods. For one special audience, a club in central Iowa still performs music live, just as it has for more than a century.
Our habit at our fortnightly meetings is to eat and do music. However, we're going to reverse that this afternoon, if you don't mind.
In 2009, Des Moines' Fortnightly Musical Club celebrated its centennial the best way it knows how, with a performance.
I'm sure there are a lot of people that have never heard of Fortnightly Musical Club, but the thing that has held us together is the music and performing.
Winifred Kelly is a past president of Fortnightly and has been a member more than half the club's existence.
I think that the Fortnightly almost provides a union for the professional musicians. If for people are musical, they want to perform their music, and then they like to have somebody listen.
And Iowans have been listening since 1909, hungry for live music in the years before radio. The all-women's club promoted concerts on street corners, at schools, in factories, and for charity. In the early 20s, Fortnightly boasted over 500 members. Members are required to be performers. They provided their own talent for the century celebration. Most are musical professionals, teachers, conductors, singers, or musicians. The playful tune Good Morning, Mr. Bluebird features soprano Rebecca Gruber, flutist Sharon Stillwell, and pianist Sonia Siebert. The club no longer imposes 10-cent fines for being late, but the most charming tradition endures, performances every 2 weeks in the homes of members. For a club that specializes in live music, only one old recording was ever made.
And I had always thought that we should record one of these because they were always so good. And so this time I got out my little recorder and a cassette.
This performance was taped in the home of Wynn Kelly.
Well, I think that my favorite performance was the duet. When I heard those voices, they were so completely blended, and that's the one I think is outstanding.
You can hear how thrilled the ladies were after the 1973 program. Marjorie Evans was the senior member there. She joined Fortnightly when the club was just 3 years old.
They used to have teas in the afternoon and spoil everybody's dinner.
Yeah.
So I suggested that we try it out, having lunch instead of tea.
And so it has been ever since. After more than 100 years, the club continues to present top-notch entertainment for themselves while nourishing the musical arts community, like the Bellin Quartet, which has ties going back to the Fortnightly Musical Club. This look back through Iowa's musical history can take on any form of melody, even old commercial jingles. This is from a long-gone grocery store chain.
It's fresh, it's inky-dinky.
Or this catchy tune for a tire commercial that ran for decades.
Go to Butterworth's, you automobiles.
In 2007, we came across an old disc recording that was used to teach children how to sing. It was part of an instructional system developed by Charles Fullerton at Iowa State Teachers College in Cedar Falls. Bill Sherman is an author and historian on one-room schools.
Fullerton published books to help children learn how to sing, and then he also produced phonograph records.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down. Falling down, London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
The teacher could put on a phonograph record, play the record. Children could listen to the record and learn how to sing.
Fullerton, a teacher himself at Norway, Parkersburg, and Manson, called his instructional model the choir plan. Phonograph records would play a song and the kids would imitate the vocals with the aid of Fullerton's books, first published in 1910. The recordings were made in collaboration with Francis Clark, a former Ottumwa teacher who later worked at the Victor Talking Machine Company. This song, titled The Quaker's Wife, was recommended for fifth graders.
Merrily dance the Quaker's wife, and merrily dance the Quaker. Merrily dance the Quaker's wife, and merrily dance the Quaker.
A musical prodigy who wrote his first march at the age of 14 became known as Iowa's March King. Carl King made Fort Dodge his home, where he directed the municipal band. He is responsible for 300 compositions.
Our guest on the summer bandstand tonight is the composer of some of America's finest marches.
This 1950 broadcast is from NBC Radio in New York City.
Visiting us from Fort Dodge, Iowa, here is Mr. Carl King.
He was also a fixture in Des Moines.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Iowa State Fair proudly presents the music of Carl King, the March King.
But you played at the Iowa State Fair.
38 years there, and there's where my old circus experience came in handy, because we played all the acts in front of the grandstand.
WHO-TV interviewed King for his 80th birthday.
I never could decide which way to go on either writing or directing or on the show business angle or the concert. And the only way I could resolve them was by just doing a little of each.
Ole Olson was a member of the Fort Dodge band for many years.
I always said that there was nobody that was named more aptly, because he had a regal bearing about him. He could walk into a room of the greatest band directors and things at a convention in Chicago, and he would just immediately command everybody's attention.
Spectators filled stadiums and town squares when Carl King was in town. In 1960, he conducted a record 13,000 musicians at the University of Michigan. A year later, fans in Oskaloosa showed their respect by cheering and honking their horns. At one time, King was band leader for the Barnum and Bailey Circus. His favorite march is titled Barnum and Bailey's Favorite, performed here by the Carl King Municipal Band.
Thank you.
We'll be back shortly with more of the best music from Iowa archives, including a visit to the historic Surf Ballroom, the last interview with Andy Williams, and the deepest voice in our library of rare recordings. This is Iowa Public Radio. You are listening to a flashback in Iowa's musical history, old recordings that span three centuries. I'm Rick Fredrickson, and this is music from our historic sound project, Iowa Archives. The next stop on the trail of audio archaeology is the town of Ortonville on Highway 6, east of Adel. It vanished long ago, but this old recording is in the Sidney Robertson Cowell collection at the American Folklife Center.
This record was made by Mr. Thomas Mann in Ortonville, Iowa in July 1937.
Ortonville was essentially the headquarters of a traveling circus family for more than 100 years. Thomas Mann was a virtuoso in the hammered dulcimer, a rarely seen instrument with about 75 strings. It looks a little like an auto harp and is played like a xylophone, with two padded mallets that strike the strings. From 1937, the song is a jig, no longer popular, in a town that no longer exists, but is preserved in our Iowa Archives project. One of America's most famous places for music endures, the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, and standing on the stage where so many big stars have performed is a nostalgic thrill. The original ballroom was destroyed in a 1947 fire. The existing Surf looks much like it did when it opened its doors in 1948, resembling a beach club with palm trees and bamboo. The cavernous hall has a listed capacity of 2,100. The Surf has changed hands, been threatened by dilapidation, and preserved by investors.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
A key force for saving the landmark was the rock and roll tragedy that occurred here in 1959.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin. Three young singers who soared to the heights of show business on the current rock and roll craze were killed today in the crash of a light plane in an Iowa snow flurry. The singers were identified as Richie Valens, 17, Buddy Holly, 22, and J.P. Richardson, known professionally as the Big Bopper.
It was the beginning of the rock and roll era, and we had teen dances every Tuesday night at the Surf.
Linda Moen Muth is sitting in the same booth where she was on that fateful night in 1959.
And so it wasn't a big deal that night. It wasn't until after his death that we realized we had witnessed something that would be history.
What songs did you remember Buddy singing?
Peggy Sue and That'll Be the Day were his two great hits from that time that we remember, and we danced to That'll Be the Day several times that night. He played it more than once.
There are no recordings from that night, but YouTube has the greatest hits of all three performers at the peak of their careers. This sound clip is dated 1958 at the Paramount Theater in New York. In 1957, after playing in Denver, Holly was interviewed by reporter Freeman Hover.
And we'd like to also mention that we would like to thank you for plugging our records, and we'd like to thank everyone around here for listening to them and buying them.
Yeah, this is the Big Bopper speaking. Chantilly
lace and a pretty... Early the next morning, my dad always had the radio on and heard that the plane had crashed, and I can remember just standing in the kitchen, not able to move. I could not believe my ears.
They were singing.
Late in January, the Winter Dance Party is reconvened every year to commemorate the day the music died, and fans return to the Surf Ballroom from around the world. The celebrated Surf Ballroom was finally listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2011. From Clear Lake, we jump across Interstate 35 and spend a couple minutes with Iowa's music man from Mason City, Meredith Wilson. In 1962, he was back home talking to young musicians after a band concert.
When I was your age, you know, the big evil was to linger in the pool hall after school.
Then Wilson reverts to his lead character in The Music Man, Harold Hill, who comes to River City to save the town.
With a capital T, Ranger Team stands for cool. We should have got trouble.
Wilson's second wife, Renee, then sang another Music Man hit, a song made even more famous on The Ed Sullivan Show. After winning a Tony for Best Musical, the play became a movie. All the stars were in Mason City for the 1962 premiere. Arthur Godfrey was MC.
My light rolls, oh light rolls, oh light rolls.
Buffalo Bill! The one who will steal your heart is the cutest little fella you have ever seen. He's only 8 years old, and already he's a great big movie star, and that's Ronnie Howard right there. Give me a boy.
Hi. Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George?
Well, sure. Pour me a cup, Gracie. You
know, establishing his fame on radio, Meredith Wilson's orchestra and his humor were in great demand.
Here's a medley of some of the tunes.
This excerpt is from The Robert Young Show in 1939.
And I'd like to say that while Meredith has spent 6 weeks in England, he seems to be the same unassuming Iowa boy that he was when he went over there. Here he is, Meredith Wilson.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to return to the wireless and to resume my broadcasting.
No speeches.
Righto. Ready, men? Pip-pip.
Some of Wilson's projects were experimental. Here, he banters with a group of actors in a Jell-O commercial.
Well, look who's here. It's my talking people.
A rare 45 RPM record contains a marketing campaign with Wilson promoting the state of Iowa.
It's a promise for tomorrow. And a memory of long, long ago.
Wilson's love for Iowa is immortal. He was buried in Mason City in 1984.
When you say it like we say it back home.
You're listening to music from Iowa Archives. Rare and unusual sound recordings and musical moments in Iowa's history that are worth remembering and hearing again. This is the earliest known recording of the original Drake Des Moines Symphony Orchestra, playing Mozart's Concerto for Two Pianos in E-flat major. The warped audio tape is dated 1950. The conductor was the late Frank Noyes, a violinist and professor of music at Drake, who founded the symphony in 1937. There are boxes of old recordings from his three decades on the podium. We remastered some of the tapes and invited the current conductor into our studios for a listen. Maestro Joseph Junta, meet Maestro Frank Noyes.
Obviously, he's drilling the lower strings.
Have you ever heard his voice before?
Never. No, this is the first time. The first thing that I notice is that when he's speaking in a very normal voice, there's not a sound in the room. And that usually means that the musicians are quite respectful of what's happening.
Before Noyes started the Drake Des Moines Symphony, he founded Nebraska's first orchestra and even conducted the Paris Symphony. He also painted. Maestro Junta says he was a Renaissance man. Professor Noyes died in 1983. Now the low point of the show, just how low can a male voice sing? It's a song given to Iowa's governor by Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev when he visited here in 1959. Contained in the collection of 20 record albums is this Ukrainian folk tune. Listen for the deep bass vocals at the close of the song. In the fall of 2010, Iowa Public Radio conducted what might have been the last media interview with Andy Williams, the Iowa-born singer who hosted a long-running variety show on TV. In this classic skit with the Smothers Brothers, Andy plays the straight man.
Andy!
Tommy, now why'd you do that?
I want him to introduce us.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Introduce everybody else. What's the matter?
My brother doesn't think you introduced us.
Well, I introduced you earlier in the show. Besides that, everybody here knows you.
Not everybody knows us. So I've got a lot of. I got about five letters to my house just addressed to occupant. Big deal. I get letters addressed to occupant too. I get lots of them.
See, nobody knows you also. Nobody knows either one of us if you introduce us. Wait, all right. I'll give you an introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, the Occupant Brothers.
Few performers can match the singing career of Andy Williams, the smooth tenor with more than 20 gold and platinum record albums, and legions of fans who can't get enough of this superstar crooner.
Guess there's no use in hanging around.
Andy was the youngest of four singing brothers, and with Bob, Don, and Dick, were the choir boys at Wall Lakes Presbyterian Church. He was 82 when Andy told us it was his father's tough love that made the Williams Brothers Quartet.
He said we had to work harder than other people because we weren't quite as good as the rest of them, which is a terrible thing for a father to say to his children, you know, in retrospect. But at the time, he thought that was a way of getting us to practice and to work harder.
We talked with Andy at his theater in Branson, his memories fresh from writing his life story.
Only recently, you know, in the last, say, 19 years since I've been here in Branson, have I got over the feeling that maybe I really do belong here. You know, maybe I am all right.
Say, Joe, yeah. Who are those four good-looking young fellows over there?
The Williams brothers cut their teeth on radio. When their father moved the family to Des Moines, the boys went to school, earned money singing at funerals, and got their first big break on WHO's Iowa Barn Dance Frolic. Then it was off to Chicago.
Bob, 20, Dick, 14, Don, 17, and Andy boasting the ripe old age of 12.
This 1940 recording is from the National Barn Dance on WLS. Next stop for the Williams brothers was Cincinnati, where their collective paycheck hit $400 a week. Then, in the thick of World War II, the head of the household decided his singing sons were ready for L.A.
Mail call from the United States of America.
They starred in Mail Call, a program for servicemen overseas, and in 1944 harmonized in this patriotic tune.
We've got the ships, we've got the guns, we've got the courage too. We're fighting sons of the Navy Blue.
All four brothers served in uniform, just 6 months in the Merchant Marines for Andy. When they reunited, entertainer Kay Thompson recruited the brothers for a touring nightclub act that Andy remembers well.
We'd come out and say, hello, 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 and howdy-do, how have you been, and hoop-de-do, and a big fat Western howdy.
Hello, 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 and howdy-do.
And then we introduced Kay Thompson. Kay Thompson, Kitty Kay Thompson.
Kay Thompson, Kitty Kay Thompson.
And then we introduced ourselves. This is Andy, this is Bob, this is Don, this is Dick.
Dick William, Don William, Bob William, and Andy William. Hello.
When the Williams brothers went their own ways, Andy launched a solo act, appearing in nightclubs and becoming a regular on the Steve Allen Show.
So.
His recording career took off after Canadian Sunset cracked the top 10. Claudine Longet became his first wife, and he hosted a highly rated network variety show throughout the 60s. The biggest stars of the day wanted to be with Andy, singing here with Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Now that we're old.
He also introduced new talent, including the Osmonds and a young Elton John. He even sang with Kermit the Frog.
two of a kind. For your information, we're two of a kind.
Andy closed out his career in Branson, Missouri, where he operated several businesses and performed at his theater. When we met him in his dressing room, he was wearing shorts and sneakers just back from his morning walk. We talked about his friendship with Bobby Kennedy. Andy was with friends upstairs when the presidential candidate was assassinated.
John Glenn and I went to the hotel where he was staying, which is the Beverly Hills Hotel, to pick up another suit and a shirt, because the others were all bloodstained. And so we had that, but we forgot to get him a dark tie, a black tie. I had one on, so we used that. And that's the one I guess he was buried with.
It wasn't long before Andy would be diagnosed with cancer, and 2 years before his death. He had fond recollections of Iowa.
You know, everybody in town knew each other, and everybody was open their doors at Christmas time, and practically strung lights from one house to another. But I became sort of known as a farm boy in a tuxedo.
Do you always get standing ovations like you did last night?
Well, a lot of the time, yeah.
You're very modest.
What can I say? Yes, I do get standing ovations, at least one, sometimes three.
What's your favorite song in your career?
I guess I'd have to say Moon River, because I can still sing it after all these years and not get sick of it. And I'm lucky I didn't record, you know, Itsy Bitsy Polka Dot Bikini, because I would hate having to do that all the time. I have that my theme song, but Moon River is such a great song that Henry Mancini wrote for me. It isn't the same arrangement I have on the record. It's a beautiful arrangement, and I love doing it every night. So I have to say Moon River is my favorite one, because I can still do it and love it.
After his death in 2012, Christmas hasn't been the same without Andy Williams. It was his favorite season, and he was a fan favorite from Branson to Vegas to Wall Lake, where his birthplace home is a tribute to one of Iowa's favorite sons.
We're after that same rainbows and waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River.
We hope you've enjoyed this special showcasing the music of Iowa Archives, our project to share and remember Iowa's history through historic audio recordings. Thanks to John Pimble for sound restoration and technical assistance. I'm Rick Fredrickson, and this has been a production of Iowa Public Radio News.